You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello, that was bad. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, November 28th, 2016. You're listening to episode 235. My name is Rob. I'm here with Jason. We are recording this before Thanksgiving, but this is being released after Thanksgiving. So, Jason, how was your Thanksgiving?
I expected it was fantastic.
Great. I'm glad to hear
that. Deep-fried a turkey. Had too much food. Ooh, had some lumpia.
Lumpia.
It's lumpia. It is Filipino egg rolls.
I've had those. Those are excellent.
Yeah, Rome makes them. That's good. who we will be/were with for Thanksgiving. Right. So
you know what? I think we talked about this last episode a little bit.
Did we?
I think so. Let's move on.
Okay. Hey, you know what?
This is the first episode we've recorded since the election.
Yeah, it is. It is. So
we talked about this before we started recording.
We talked for a while about this, actually, to see what we were going to talk about.
Yeah. So this is not a political show.
Right.
Right? This is a show about board games, and we like it that way.
It's also a show about people.
Right. And about us.
And a community of people.
Yeah.
That we love very dearly.
Yeah. So, we kind of went through this before we started recording, and I don't want to get it wrong.
I think what I want to say first is, we're just these two guys in Michigan, right? We're these two white straight guys in Michigan. We're frustrated by the results, and we're a little nervous about things, I think it's safe to say, but I think our feelings don't compare to several others in the game community who we've talked to who are minorities in very all sorts of different ways, or protected classes who don't feel so protected right now.
Yeah.
And we support all of you, and we are there for you. And we're always here as people. And I know there's only so much that we can do as two white guys in the Midwest, but it's very important to us that we say that.
I don't really know that we should say a whole lot more. I guess we just wanted to make sure that this small venue that we have, that we said that publicly and shared that with our audience. Now is not the time to give up and bury your head in the sand.
Right.
Now's the time
to do what you believe in.
Do what you believe
Whatever
in.
Whatever that is, you need to do that. And don't just rant on Facebook and argue with people. That's not going to solve anything, you know.
Right.
Do things that matter. Donate to places you care about, places that may not be helped out anymore. Do things that, that matter to you. And don't wait 4 years to do those things.
Right.
Do those things for yourself now, you know.
And for your friends and for your family.
Yes.
And even for the people who are not your friends or your family, but people that need your help.
Right. Because here's what I want to have. I don't want to have all those post-apocalyptic games come true. I mean, I love John Gilmore and all, but... Oh, and Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. Oh my gosh, I just realized, what is that like, that's like John Gilmore's thing now, is post-apocalyptic stuff? Because I realized he made Wasteland Express Delivery with those guys, and that's also post-apocalyptic, so...
It's kind of like the ultimate triumvirate of game designers.
Indeed.
Reaching... what I hope is only the beginning of a long and productive career, and not the pinnacle.
Right. Well, I mean, to be fair for John, I mean, good luck beating Dead of Winter. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It's like Matt Leacock, right?
Sure.
Great dude, but I mean,
yep.
He made Pandemic, and then anything else he makes after Pandemic is not Pandemic,
sure.
Right? I mean, so
yeah.
It's kind of how I feel with Unreal Estate. I mean, you know, so
sure.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I agree. So, that's probably enough on that.
Yeah, but so, I mean, hey, if you want to talk to people or something, you know.
Talk to us,
talk to friends.
Yeah.
If you're friends with Isaac Shalev, that guy has been great.
Yep.
If you're friends with him on Facebook, he has been fantastic since the election. And somebody who I've had quite a few email conversations with back and forth that have been really, really good. More I talk to that guy, the more I like that guy. I'll tell you what.
Good guy.
He may not be an Iron Design champion, but in my heart, he's a champion.
Yep. There you go.
So,
champion in our hearts.
Yes. Hey, on a lighter note.
Lighter note.
We received a present recently from a builder.
Oh, boy.
A new builder. So, I met this guy recently. I mean, I've met him before, but I just saw him recently, and he said, hey, I have a present for you. And ooh. I said, oh, okay. I wasn't sure. And he's like, so I was listening to your show, and I was like, oh, he goes, I'm really enjoying your show. And I said, I didn't know you listened to a show. He goes, I just started because I met you, and then I started listening to your show, and I really like it. And you were talking about cola. Mm-hmm. He said you were talking specifically about bourbon barrel cola. So I went and bought some, and it was really good. So then I went and bought more for you guys. So he did. He bought us a 4-pack of bourbon barrel cola, the cool. The private selection kind that we like. This yeah. is the same kind you brought back.
It absolutely is.
And I was telling him, I actually found another bourbon barrel cola I was going to share with you,
oh.
Which I will do at a later time, but I tried it. Not nearly as good as this.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So right. I was like, this is still the pinnacle. That was Bruce Miller.
Bruce.
So right. He's I met him through Mark and through On Real Estate, working with Mark and Mark's company. So,
well, thanks for the gift, Bruce, and thanks for listening.
Yes.
All right, here we go. Oh. Love that right. sound.
It's a good sound.
Mmm. So
oh,
good.
Man. Yeah. This is even better than the other kind than I thought it was.
Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah. Very much appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We're lining up our caps here.
I think we're putting them on the Millennium Falcon here. They okay. fit so nicely.
They do, right so. Over those things.
And we have two more, so literally we can cover all six of
this
these.
This is perfect. So things. You'll need to take a picture of this at some point and put it in the show notes.
Good idea, yes.
Yeah.
After it's full, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
My yeah. son saw it and was like, what's this? And I was like, it's just another piece. It just stays on there. He's like, okay.
Nice. So I played some games lately.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. I mean, with moving into a new house and tearing my life apart and putting it back together piece by piece, I actually managed to find some time to have a couple of friends over and play some games.
Cool.
So that was neat. We play tested something that I don't think I'm allowed to talk about yet.
Oh, that's exciting.
But it went pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be able to talk about it soon.
Yeah.
It's nothing, but I think it's exciting. I think it's pretty cool, but
I think it's probably pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. All right. I'm not going to try and downplay it. It's pretty cool. Anyway, so that went real well, but then
it's pretty cool.
I also introduced this couple to Onitama.
Yeah.
Which is such a good game. Oh man, it's such
so
a good,
good
game.
Yeah. My wife and I played that recently.
Yeah.
It's the first time I'd actually played it. I've only seen it played.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to bring that to work, actually, and make Alan play that with me.
Yeah.
I think he'd really like it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically chess. It's simplified chess.
Simple chess. Yep.
But, yeah. But more fun, because being that your options are so limited, it really levels the playing field.
Yep.
And just makes you have to think really
yep.
hard.
Yep.
So.
And, yeah, it's... Yeah. There's not so many crazy possible future combinations. You don't have to go through, you know, quintillions of possible permutations.
Right.
It's, yeah.
So, speaking of that,
sure.
This is an interesting game tidbit that I was reading about. So, newer chess players, like,
mm-hmm.
kind of like the rogue new guys, the millennial chess players, right, who are becoming very good. So, like, I'm a super good chess player, but I'm new at it. They will actually, they're like their team, right?
Mm-hmm.
They take all the chess matches from history that have been logged, right?
Yep.
And then they run those through a supercomputer thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it looks for moves that have never been made.
Sure.
Right? Or have rarely ever been made. And then they use that to build a strategy to beat the current champions.
Mm.
And it works.
Wow.
You're not prepared to defend against something you've never seen before,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Because there are so many different moves in chess that are, you know, like the this and the that, like you understand, right? Like, oh, he's trying to set up a rope-a-dope, blah, 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 blah. I made that up.
Sure.
Rope-a-dope
right.
is actually a boxing term. Thank you, John Travolta. But anyways, yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Like,
yeah.
It feels like you're cheating when you do that, but you're really not. I mean, you're just teaching yourself
sure.
new ways to play.
Yeah, there was, I think it was a Radiolab episode many years ago that talked about analyzing a chess game and about the people who would log these games.
Mm-hmm.
Would go to tournaments or observe tournaments all over the world and record every move as it happens and dumped it into these databases, and that as things would happen, they would record a master game move by move and analyze the moment when it becomes a completely unique game. Because, you know, early moves.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, early moves are, there's only so many possible options that you have in the first move, right? And then the second move, and it grows exponentially from there. And there will come a point, you know, up to a certain point from the beginning to some threshold, there will be a part where someone has played this exact same game before.
Well, I'm sure that happens most of the time.
Most of the time now, right? Because people have been playing chess for thousands of years,
right?
So, but there, in terms of recorded knowledge, there comes a point in every chess game where somebody will do something that has never happened before in human history, and
it's crazy.
It's crazy, and so it's about the people who record that stuff and collect that data and how they analyze those moments. And it's been years since I heard the episode, and I don't remember the specifics. I think the Radiolab episode was just kind of like in awe of the wonder of such a thing.
Right.
You know, I don't think they got into any details about it or, you know, strategic information gained. But I thought those were really kind of cool moment, thing to think about.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that with some board game, Settlers of Catan. I'm just going to record 10,000 plays.
Okay.
Well, by then I'd probably be so good I wouldn't really need to do that.
Probably not.
Yeah.
And you could still get totally screwed by the dice.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Catan.
Catan. Hey, we're going to talk about a topic.
Yeah, okay.
You brought one, even tweeted about it ahead of time.
Holy cow, did I get a response to this topic? So let me go back through my Twitter here and make sure that I get back to the beginning. Okay, so I tweeted, why do players prefer multiplayer solitaire games? And then also to flip that question, why do players hate Take That games? So maybe before I get into all the Twitter responses, what do you think? Why do so many people, and I don't want to say all,
right,
but I think a lot, like greater than 50% of people in the hobby like we are, who are into it,
mm-hmm.
I think lean toward that multiplayer solitaire concept and really, really hate Take That. So what do you think? Why is that?
Okay. So, well, multiplayer solitaire, you mean over regular solitaire, right?
Yeah, like Dominion, where, you know, we're all four playing the same game at the same time, but we're all playing our own game.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's not what I thought you meant. So I'm glad you clarified that. Why do people like that so much?
Why? Yeah.
Well... You know, okay, so one of the cool things about that to me is, so why do I like that for Dominion, I'll say, is,
yeah,
well, I feel fairly disassociated with the other people playing the game, because you're just trying to watch, like, basically you're watching how many point cards are they taking, right?
Uh-huh.
That's literally all you have to care about in that game.
How
many point cards are they
taking? In terms of what everyone else is doing, yeah.
And when I play Dominion, there's one card that's a take that card. We take it out and replace it with a non-take that card.
I think it's the Militia.
It just feels so out of place, and you're just annoyed when someone uses it.
I agree. It doesn't feel like it fits in with base Dominion.
So the reason I think I personally like it so much, and I would bet a lot of other game designers / players especially are like this, is I think that I can make a better plan than you, and I think that I can beat you with that better plan, right? Mm-hmm. And that game lets me prove that, right?
You're absolutely right about that.
You can't stop me. If I lose, sure, the shuffle could have been bad, but if I lose Dominion, you outplayed me. I think most of the time,
mm-hmm.
you outplayed me. Based playing the odds, you outplayed me.
I think it's a fair statement.
And so that's the number one thing for me. The number two thing is when I make a plan, I don't want you to mess up my plan, right?
Yeah.
It's the game we played Gubs, right?
Yeah.
It's a fun, cool game, but the thing that got me most about that game was nothing was sacred, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking, okay, I got this. As long as I keep the cards in my hand, I'm safe. And then you traded hands with me, and then I didn't want to play the game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did, but I mean, I finished it, but I never played it again.
I actually won, but...
I may have, but it still wasn't fun for me because... Uh-huh. I need a way to make a plan as a gamer, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, as a strategic gamer, that's even more important to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that I could have my plan completely screwed up by somebody who's just out to get me,
mm-hmm.
that stinks.
Sure. Now, those are the two extremes, right? There's a string. The one is Dominion, where everything is sacred.
Right.
And then Gubs is the opposite end of that, where nothing is sacred.
Right.
You have zero control over your own fate. That's like Munchkin is that way, right?
Right.
Where you have no control over what could possibly happen to you, right?
Right.
And that is rarely fun, I think, for me.
Right. Interestingly, I actually like Munchkin. I wish the game was longer. I always feel like just when I feel like things are getting cool, then the game's over.
Yeah.
And I've lost.
Well, but Munchkin also could theoretically go on forever.
It could. Right. I mean, yeah. It totally could.
So I think those are fair assessments. I'm with you on that. With Dominion as the example, that if I'm doing well in Dominion, I feel clever. And if I'm not doing as well as somebody else, I know that it's because they're a better player than me. They're making smarter choices, probably, you know, more efficient decisions. And that's good. So what about the other question though? Why do people hate Take That so much? And I do think that these are separate questions. And
oh, not absolutely. Not
the reverse of each other.
Right. So for me, a game either has to have Take That, where something is still sacred, right? Mm-hmm. Like they can't completely ruin what I have, right? Or Take That, where that's the whole point of the game, right? Literally the point mm-hmm. of the game is to screw everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I still want something to be sacred, right? Whether it's the cards in my hand or the cards mm-hmm. in my deck, something no one can mess with.
Sure.
If I've earned points, don't take those away. You
sure.
know?
Yep.
But I think the reason people hate Take That so much is two reasons pop into my head. One is the plan thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I know what I'm trying to do. You're stopping me. Why don't you just do your own thing, darn it, and mm-hmm. let me do my thing? There's that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other reason I think is because it feels mean, right? So when you're dealing with people you've never met before,
yeah.
right? If you sit down with a green game group at Gen Con or some other convention, or just your friendly local game store, you sit down for a game day and playing with three other people you don't know and you're playing a Take That game, it just feels like you're picking on people, right? It just feels like you're being mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for most of us, uh-huh. that's not fun.
It's because it feels mean.
Right.
Okay.
So
we're talking about direct competition maybe versus indirect competition.
Right. And I think the other thing is inevitably one person will always feel picked on. Is that a fair statement? You know, like a four player game.
I think it depends on the group.
I think it's pretty common though. Most groups I played with multiple people in a Take That game, someone is whining about getting dumped on. Sometimes that someone is me. Sometimes it's someone else.
Well, and sometimes it's a legit complaint if everyone right. actually is dumping on one person.
Right.
Okay. See, I kind of like Take That games. Like I agree with you that the truly nothing is sacred situations, those are just kind of frustrating. And there can, if fun can be had there, but more often than not, I'm not going to really enjoy it or I'm not going to want to keep playing that game. But I don't dislike, I kind of enjoy some back and forth, you know?
Well, that's, you know, I think a pure take, like Water Balloon Washout is a mostly Take That game, right?
Mostly. What you have in your hand is pretty.
Hand management
yeah.
and then Take That, right?
Yeah.
But I love the game. I mean, I did design it. But
yeah.
the reason I think I care for like that so much is mm-hmm. because that kind of Take That is the fun of the game, right?
Sure.
So I think that is probably a pretty good description as well, right? Mm-hmm. The fun is Take That. In a game like... So in Gubbs, if I remember correctly, my biggest problem was the Take That part wasn't unfun.
Mm-hmm.
But I never felt like I was getting traction to do anything, and that felt unfun, mm-hmm, right?
Sure.
So, like, if I can make something in a game or be building something, whatever, and then other things happen to affect my game but don't affect that, totally comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still able to possibly feel like I'm moving forward in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Okay. I played several weeks ago. I played a game called You Are the Maniac.
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. I think it was just a little Kickstarter thing that kind of came and went. When we were at Gen Con, I bought that board game bento box.
Oh, it was in there. Remember?
It was one of those things in there. Yeah. And it's a game thematically. It's about, you know, horror movie tropes, classic horror movie tropes. And all the players are you know, slashers trying to kill the highest value targets in the slasher movie.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the theme is pretty
thematically disturbing.
Pretty
it's
poor
cool.
taste, but it's, it is, you know, it's a trope. So anyway, it was cute. And it was a very heavy take that game. It wasn't as brutal as Gubbs, despite the theme. But I think I tweeted and I said, I just played You Are the Maniac. We had some fun. It was a nice little take that game. And somebody replied to me, and I don't recall who this was now, but somebody replied and said, there's no such thing as a nice take that game, or something to that effect.
Ah.
I disagree with that.
Oh, I totally disagree.
I don't think that was a fair assessment. But that said, let's see what kind of responses we got on Twitter here.
Let's see what the Twitterverse has to say.
So first from John Dubois. John says...
I like John.
I do too. John's a good dude.
Less, depends on what he says here, John. We'll see if we still like you.
John says, interactivity adds social dimensions and unpredictability. People like or dislike based on their gaming goals.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who games to socialize prefers high interactivity. Players who view games as puzzles shy away from it. I think that's an important distinction to make.
That's good.
Yeah, the people who like the social stuff don't really care how they're interacting. They're just interested in interacting with people. But the people who see it as a puzzle, they don't want anybody to go in there and mess up the pieces once they've got them organized.
Right.
You know? So he's basically saying that, you know, it depends on the player, you know, and what kind of person are you? Are you, and why are you playing games? Are you doing it to solve a puzzle, or are you doing it just to have fun with your friends? And, or maybe having fun with your friends is when you're all solving a puzzle together. I guess he's saying, what's your motivation?
Right.
Yeah. Why are you all sitting down together?
And that's interesting because I would say, well, the idea of having like playing games with my friends is very important to me, and that is the fun, because I'd rather play games with friends than with non-friends, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know each other. It's fun, sure. Right? We've got a thing. But I see games as puzzles more than anything, for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. You agree with that about me, probably, right?
About you, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. And I like a puzzle game now and then, but I'm there mostly to spend some time with friends.
Right.
That's my number one goal.
And I think that probably comes from different gaming backgrounds, right?
Yeah. Sure. So, yeah. Absolutely. And actually, a couple other comments. This is from Ben Osteen. He replies to John's comment. He says, there can also be a mode of cooperative talk, i.e. all against the game, present in degrees. Which I think is an interesting thing where I think we see some of that sometimes in playtesting and getting feedback from testers. You know, people kind of tend to take the same side on things. And we think we talked about that before when we were, you have been at UBPUB, that when, after we finish a game, if there are four players in the game and we say, you know, we ask for feedback, a lot of people are silent. And then somebody who you thought was having a blast the whole time, if someone else talks and starts saying, I don't like this game, that person's going to agree with them.
Right. Right.
You know, people kind of like to be on the same side. They like to team up in a way.
Right.
And I think that's in a human nature. People like to team up. And so if the game is forcing them not to team up, that can be right. frustrating.
And I think on the feedback note, when somebody is silent and they think, I had a great time with this game, and then somebody else says, this game was terrible, they're like, oh, gosh, I was wrong.
Yeah, what
I was
did
wrong.
I miss?
This game is bad. Oh, yeah, it's bad. It's bad. I agree.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Let's see. Next comment was from Seth Jaffe. Seth says, good question. I think some people want to see the results of their choices and don't want to see their work undone.
Yep. That's good.
Yep.
Imagine, you've played Patchwork, right?
I've not.
Okay. Well, so a lot of builders have played Patchwork. Guys, imagine Patchwork, building your quilt. If one of the options was to take things off your quilt, I would straight up punch someone in the face if they try to take someone off my quilt.
Sure.
Because the whole point of that game is that Zen building your quilt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep. Ben Osteen also replies to Seth and says, yes, and also to potential work done. So Seth was, people don't want to see their work undone. And Ben's saying, yeah, and they also don't want their potential work to be undone.
Right. When you're saving up for three turns to do something and then someone ruins it.
Yeah.
What game did I hate that did that? Wasn't there a game I hated that did that recently?
You hate a lot of games, Jason.
But there was a game recently, I feel like that was the case. But anyways.
I don't know. A lot of comments here. Gamosity says, for me, it's because those games, I'm assuming he means Take That Games here. For me, it's because those games often give options which purely harm others at no gain to myself. Boring.
Yes.
Yeah. Further, building often takes more time, strategy, resources than destroying it. It can feel Sisyphean to spend turns building only to have someone knock it down with a single card or play. And then, of course, there's spite. He's right. If you're doing this big engine building thing, it takes a lot of time and effort to assemble. If there's a card in a game that can just destroy all that in one swipe, that really blows.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That is really... There's a game I played recently that did that. I don't remember, but I hated it.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Bo Severson says, because some people love Take That and some people don't. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Bo. Yeah, words of wisdom there.
Good one. Let's see. Andrew Shoemaker says, Take That introduces an element of politics to be wrangled. I'm often not interested in that.
Oh, is that... He's talking about the social aspect of, like, who do I target, you know?
Yeah.
This is one of the jokes you always have in playtest. Game designers never win games if there's a Take That mechanic, because everyone screws the game designer, because that's the one who they feel comfortable. If they don't know him, they're like, well, this jerk designed the game.
Yeah. Let's see. Tony Hart says, either is fine. Take That games should have mechanics that limit king making. Well, yeah, I agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, definitely. I'm gonna kind of wrap it up here with comments from Danny Devine and Jay Treat. Danny says, it feels good when you can control your own stuff where other people can't ruin everything, like real life. he's right. I think Jay wraps it up really nicely here. He says, conflict isn't as pleasant as competition. Some of us get enough of that in real life.
Yep.
I think that's a good way to put it. Conflict versus competition. And I really like that response. So what I'm getting from people here is they feel like too often Take That is ruinous.
Yep.
And that Take That, if it's fair, that it's not only punishing, if the punishment of Take That is not too punishing, but it also helps me as a player, it's not so bad.
Right. Because then it's under the guise of, right, like, someone on real estate, there are cards where, like, I can take a card from you, mm-hmm. but then I get to keep it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm taking a card from you because I'm mean. I'm taking a card from you because I need a card.
Sure.
Yeah.
The reason I'm thinking about this is because of Saloon Tycoon. The number one complaint that I've seen in comments and reviews of the game is that it has too much Take That. That people feel like it's a mean game and it's not fun. And people want to build and they don't want anything to get in the way of them building. And I never heard that feedback from any of my playtesters. Not a single one.
Nope. I know I was there for a lot of them.
Not a single person in playtesting ever said that they felt like there was too much Take That. If anything, people wanted more.
More, they would say, yeah, more interaction. Like
yeah,
that.
Let me knock down structures. Let me do it. And I said, no, knocking down a structure is not fun.
Right.
Because it takes, like, because exactly what one of the commenters said, it takes so much time and so much effort to build that thing up. If one card can make you knock it down, that sucks. That sucks, and that's not fun. It's fun for the person knocking down, not fun for the person who just spent so much time and effort building that.
Something is sacred. That to me is what makes Saloon Tycoons Take That cool, is that no one can mess with my structure.
Sure. Now, so a lot of people also say that they classify Take That as, or they say it's mean. It's mean because we're both competing for the same thing. Those room tiles are, there's only one of that one. There's only one of those special characters, and we're all competing for that one. And even then, once I get a character, someone can steal it from me. And
you can steal it back.
And there are cards in the Tycoon deck that allow you to, you know, steal 3 gold from somebody. Or from people around the table, or, you know, take a card from them. I don't feel like those cards are terribly punishing to anybody.
Well, in my opinion, in that game, whenever I've played it, which is a lot of times,
yeah,
those cards hit the person with the most gold and the person in the lead, right?
Yeah, right.
They are throttling mechanics. That's all they are.
Sure.
It's like, and that's okay. It's because no one's going to pick, if somebody's out of money, nobody can hurt them.
Yeah.
Because you can't take money they don't have yet.
And I would say if losing 3 gold is going to lose the game for you, then you're not playing
you
it well.
You were going to lose the game anyways.
Yeah.
And plus, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I made this rule up, but You can't move people on the last turn,
right? Last turn, right.
Because you made a balance take that. There's the balance. You balance the take that in that game.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because of that.
Yeah.
If you could switch things on the last turn, I could see people getting ticked.
It would get crazy.
Literally, they have a plan. They feel good about it. And then everything gets moved, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it is something. It's something that is weighing heavily on me. I should have said, I feel like it fits thematically. I mean, it's the Old West, right? Everybody's giving each other grief in the Old West, and I don't know. I don't mean to whine or try and justify or anything. I'm just I'm not saying that everybody who has given that feedback is wrong, and I would never say that because
they're right for them.
They're right
that
for them.
Absolutely,
you know?
Right for them.
And it's just something that I need to hear, and I'm trying to process, and getting all those comments from the builders is really helpful. It's because I think the longtime builders probably know that it's something that I thought about a lot while developing that game, trying to, you know, how do I get more player interaction into this? How can it be less of a solo game, multiplayer solo game, you know, and by making everybody compete for the same things and making those things move around, I felt like there was a lot more interaction that way, and people felt more engaged with each other as well as the game. Maybe that was a bad choice.
I don't know. I mean, here's what I would say, man. Welcome to being published as a game designer. Some people are going to just not like stuff, and you're not going to understand that, right? I mean, I experienced that with Water Balloon Washout. I've already experienced that with Real Estate, where some people are like, I don't get it. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And granted, just like with you hearing complaints, that's the vast minority. But you still hear it, and it bothers you, because you're like, oh, come on. Just like my game. Why don't you like my game? My game is really good. Like my game.
I don't expect everybody to like it. That's fine. Everybody has different tastes. I'm surprised that I never heard those comments a single time during testing.
Right.
So, yeah.
To be fair, your game is a really big game with a lot of stuff going on. Somebody's bound to hate something in your game.
Sure.
So, yeah. Me, not a big fan of the designer, you know? It's a joke. I love that game. It was one of my favorites. So,
anyway, that's enough.
But, yeah, that's a, you know, they're all fair points. It's a great discussion, though, right?
Builders, thank you so much, everybody, for the comments. This has been fun, and I want to thank Matt for turning us on to this idea of asking questions before the show.
Matt Loomis, smart again.
Smart
that guy.
He's a winner.
He's a winner.
Okay, you're going to pitch a game.
I'm going to pitch a game. I'm going to re-pitch a game. I've been really into this lately, and I hope the builders are okay with that.
I've been really into rehashing old ideas.
But I have been. I mean, taking games and when I change them enough to make make the game quite a bit different, I like to re-pitch that. I like the process of pitching a game. I like talking through it on the show. And then it also invites the builders to give feedback, which I think is great. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to talk again about Minecart Madness. It's a game I talked about a lot, but don't turn the show off, guys. It's way different now. So let me talk about why. I had done a quadrillion playtests with this game. By the time I was done at Unpub, all of the feedback was positive, right? During Unpub, some of it wasn't. But by the time I was done, I had a game that was very well refined that people seemed to really, really like, right? Now, I did not take one thing into consideration, and shame on me, which is that was the Unpub audience, right? They're a little cool with things that are fast and loose, right? They're a little cool with things that are a little unbalanced. They're just cool with stuff, right? And then...
thanks, Baltimore.
Right. And then I gave it to the game company to look at. Did I say that? Can I say... I can't remember if I...
I don't recall if you said who that was or not.
I don't know. Whatever.
It's up to you.
So I had a company look at it. If I already said it, I already said it, but I can't remember, so I just won't say it, I guess. Whatever.
I think it's probably
fine. But anyways, they looked at it, and their biggest feedback was, this is unbalanced. I didn't say, because I actually told them that when I gave them to them, was that I think these things are unbalanced. And they came back and said, hey, these things are unbalanced. And I was like, thanks for the tip. But so then I was a little disheartened, but I thought, you know what? This is a really good game. And then I got an email from Isaac, and he said, hey, I'm going to be at Grand Con. I'd love to play your prototypes if you've got them, and I'd love to give you feedback. And Isaac's a nice opinionated guy, and I thought, he's smart, I'll have him do that. So we played Minecart Madness, and he, from one playing of Minecart Madness, gave me more feedback than anyone has ever given me if I add up all the feedback I've ever gotten about that game. Certainly more than, say, Josh Mills did, but just kidding. More than Josh did, more than Jason Tagmar did, more than anyone did, really. I mean, it was a ton of feedback. And Isaac, I love you, but it was critical. It was done in a very nice way, but it was, he was very critical of the game. And I trust Isaac, and that concerned me because Isaac's like, I've also been doing some stuff with a racing game, and yeah, and it doesn't have the problems your game has because we tried to fix them. And I'm like, oh, crap. So I got a little disheartened with the game, not because I got bad feedback, but because I didn't know how to fix it.
Sure. And it's Isaac, the most frustrating thing.
Right, and Isaac didn't know how to fix it either, because he said, everything I can tell you how to fix this is just turning this into a game that already exists. Because there's a lot of racing games out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, darn it. You know, so I just put it down, and I forgot about it. And I moved on, and I was working on some other games and some other mechanics. And then we started talking with Josh Mills. Josh, I'm giving you credit here, so don't whine. We started with talking with Josh Mills, and he said, let's talk about like mechanics and themes and stuff that we've always wanted to use, but we can't ever make work. So I was actually talking to Josh. We were talking about some game design ideas together, and I told him my idea that I keep not being able to place in a game, which is a simultaneous action selection Yeah, I think so. So anyways, the idea that you've got choices you can make, right? Like circles you can choose to, actions you can choose to put your token on to choose to do those, right? And it was this mechanic idea I had, and I can never fit it in anything. And somehow after talking to Josh, later that night I was going through some boxes and I found the Minecart Madness prototype and it just clicked. Oh my gosh, I can replace the whole energy and driving system in this game with this one mechanic, and it... That fixes 90% of the problems Isaac pointed out in the game. And then today you and I talked at lunch, and I think we fixed the last one. So let me pitch this game now.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give the history of how this came about.
Sure.
So the idea now is you are gnomes racing minecarts. And the idea of the game is there's a track of 10 carts, right? 15 carts. And those 15 cards look like mine tracks. There are three tracks on each, like parallel tracks, right? And so they run the whole length of the board. The cards are vertical.
Yeah, each card is divided into six sections.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
But... Yeah, each with a section of track on it.
Right, well, three sections of track on it.
Each of the six sections has a piece of track on it.
Right.
But they're lined up so that there are three separate tracks running parallel to each other.
Yep.
Yeah.
So to move across the track, if you move straight, is two squares.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also move up or sideways or down. And on this track, with these 10 cards you laid out, first of all, the cards are double-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And on the when you first lay them out, they start and it's just track and then holes like that you could possibly fall into. And then on the other side of the cards, there are gems. And the gems allow you to break the rules with movement. And I'll get to that in a minute. Basically, though, on your turn, your goal is to get from one end of the track to the other and back again. So the idea of the story of the game is I'm going to one end of the track, picking up the gems that I need, and then racing back to the finish line to get them, right? And that's my plan. So I'm going to race across 30 card lengths. Well, actually 29, right? Because you don't go all the way off the last card. So 29 and a half-ish.
This is important to point out to builders because... previously it was just one direction, point A to point B, right?
Yep, point A to point B. So it was 15 cards. It went pretty fast. The game length felt good. Maybe a couple more turns would have been nice, but the game length felt good. And the primary mechanic to move allows you to move two squares.
Mm-hmm.
So I've upped that to three to make the fact that the game is a little longer, the track is a little longer, work a little more in tune with that.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue, I'll explain the issues as I go. So on your turn, what's going to happen is you start the game, you've got your minecart little symbol and everybody is all at the end of the track,
mm-hmm.
ready to race. You got a super boring track laid out for you with just tracks and holes. Each player is given a gem color that is theirs, and that is the gem that they want to drive over as often as possible. They're not picking it up, but it's actually powering how they drive, and I'll get to that when we talk about movement. So on your turn, there's going to be a number of cards set out in front of everyone in the center. And those cards have circles on them, mm-hmm. that you can put tokens on to declare your actions. Each player has three tokens. The tokens all have a picture of your gem on them. But on the other side, they either have a picture of your gem or a red X, right? A picture of your gem means you're choosing to take that action. A red X means you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Cool. So what'll happen is the first player will choose to select an action. So they will put a token on the card. We'll go all the way around until the last player, who will then put all three of their tokens on cards. And then we go back around as each other player puts two tokens on the card. So the first player then is done. Everybody's used their tokens. Now we reveal all the tokens. So all the tokens get flipped over. You get to see who was trying to do certain things and who was bluffing just to take up space, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the cards go like this. You've got the primary card is for every two players, I would say, well, for every so many players, I'm working on the math this, there's what we call go-go-go cards. And there's two slots on these cards, and that is move three squares in any direction, okay? Backwards, forwards, doesn't matter. Sideways. So it's move three squares in any direction. The next one is roll the dice, which is roll a d6. There's two squares on this, two circles on this one as well. And you do that as you roll a d6 and you move that many in any direction you would like. You can change as you're moving.
Mm-hmm.
Next to that, there's also swap tiles. So the way swap tiles works are there are 20 mind tiles in the game. Then the mind cards, right? And they are double-sided, like I said. So when you've got those 15 bummer cards laid out on the boring side,
mm-hmm.
you also have five cards on the with the gems on them, right? And if you select that action, you can choose to mm-hmm. take one of those tiles, put it in to replace one that's already there. Then you take that boring side one, flip it to the happy side, and put it off to the side so someone else could use. So why do you care about these gems anyways? Well, I mentioned movement. Movement costs you movement points, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you're earning. However, if you anytime you would move onto a square that contains your gem, it's free. And
free
it's action. Automatic.
Free move.
You don't even have to have any movement that turn to take advantage of that. On your turn, you automatically move through those. You can use it as part of your turn. So if there is a blank space, two of your gems and two more blank spaces, and you're moving three, you could move one space, those two free spaces, and then the next two to complete your move.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty awesome,
pretty cool
way to move. I really like that mechanic of the game.
Yep.
So then in addition to that, there are specialty cards. So those cards I described are always there, always options. The specialty cards that are out are going to change based on if someone uses them or not.
Mm-hmm.
So to use them, they'll put a token on there that has to have their gem on the side they're choosing, right? Not an X, right? So if they activate that, then they get it.
Sure.
And they either get to take an action or they get to put the card in front of them and use it later. Those cards let them do things like jump gaps. One of them lets you steal first player token for the round. They let you break the rules, basically, to move quickly down the mine track. Maybe swap out extra cards, do all sorts of crazy stuff. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then the last thing about the cards you have is everybody has a card in front of them called Punch It. And the Punch It card allows you to move the number of spaces equal to the position you're in plus one. So if in a five-player game, if I'm the fifth player, I can move six spaces. But if I'm in first, I can only move two. When you use that, it's completely discarded. It's out for the game. Again, you have to put an activate token on it, not a no token. You can also put your tokens on other people's Punch It cards. You can't use it, but you can use it to block them, right? So that they couldn't use it. So if I'm going first and Rob could win by doing that, I can drop it on there to stop Rob from doing that.
And it's not like you're wasting something because you always have that no token.
Right.
You could just toss on there.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. So, yeah. And then the tokens can also be used to fake people out, right? Like if there's a cool card that you think, oh, Jason might use that, I can totally bluff that I'm using it. Just to block you or
sure.
to fake you out, right? You're mm-hmm. like, oh crap, he's going to do this. I should do this. Oh, he lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then some movement in the game. There's the free move, also the paid move and the free moves. But in addition to that, with these holes, so if I move and you're in front of me, or if you are next to me in any way, if you're in my way when I move, I push you forward mm-hmm. while moving, okay? So what that can unfortunately do sometimes is the rich get richer, right? Because you're already in the lead and I'm just pushing you farther down the track, which was a problem because you used to not be able to go into holes and you used to not be able to go off the side of the track. And Isaac said, why have holes if you can't shove people in them, right? And I was like, I mean, it's really, he was the 100th person that said that, but it finally clicked like, okay, I give up. Yes, you're right. But I never had a suitable mechanic for what happens. And then I came up with an idea that's really simple, which is, If I'm behind you and you're in the square in front of me and I push you into a hole, you appear behind me in the first open square, right? So that's simple. So that could sure. be That could be right behind me, but that could be three or four back, depending on other things here. Or if we are in a position to where there's, say I've moved and I then put a card behind me with a gap there and then move into you, I could set you back way back. You know, I could be very nasty about it. Same goes with off the side. So it's kind of the old joust rules, right? To where if I push you off the side, you just appear back on the other side.
Sure.
This is the magic of the thing. I think that mostly covers it.
I think so.
But the idea is, so the issues that Isaac pointed out, where there was a, he felt like there was a first player advantage. Sometimes there was. Sometimes there was also a last player advantage, depending on how everything went. Mm-hmm. The last player played correctly, got a good card and or got a good dice roll, they could destroy everyone. The increasing the length of the track fixes that. Plus, I love the idea now that people tend to build the track as they're going and just ignore what's behind them.
Now they have to think about that.
Now they have to think about that because they'll be like, oh, I'll just take so-and-so's good card and I'll put it behind us. Yeah, but now it's going to actually help them again.
Yep.
I really, really like this idea. I haven't fully played it. So you and I walked through it today. Mm-hmm. And you actually, we were talking about the length of the track and together talking, that's how we came up with the idea of running back.
Mm-hmm.
And we suggested maybe changing the name to There and Back Again, a miner's story.
Yeah.
That's probably great.
Good name. Top notch. It's a winner.
Yeah.
Guaranteed publication.
So I feel really good about all that.
Yeah, I think so.
Is there any other thoughts you have that I missed about it?
I'm looking forward to playing it again. I mean, I always liked it before. And I'm happy to give it a try.
My biggest concern was it getting bogged down with this action selection thing, but I don't think it will. This takes a lot of components out of the game because there were tons of these little lightning bolts for energy, seven for each player.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's three for each player. And the extra cards really kind of balance out because there were already quite a few cards in the game and only adding about five or six cards, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Being that these cards now can be taken, put in your hand and stuff like that, really, and getting rid of the pricing system on them, really frees it up to give you more options with the game.
Sure.
And the first player rotates. So if I'm first this turn, player to my left is first next turn. Your position has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that is it. I remember. What I was going to say was the number of go cards, which are the things that let you move three, will change depending on the number of players.
Sure.
So that there's enough slots that everyone can always take a move.
Yeah.
But I haven't figured out kind of the math on yet. I don't think there'll ever be less than two of them. Maybe there should be less than two because in a two-player game works like a four-player game, actually. So in a three-player game, there would probably be two. Right. In a four-player game, there would probably be three. And in a five-player game, there still might just be three. Okay. I don't know. It would depend. I'd have to figure out the math on the slots.
Sure.
Okay. So anyways, I feel pretty good about it. I'm going to get that onto the table soon. I'm just finishing up the cards now. So
awesome.
Cool. All right.
Yes. Yeah. Sounds good.
I think. Unless you have anything else.
No.
That's all we got.
Definitely out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland. I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. Call our Google voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Give us a 5-star review on podcast places. Our website is buildingthegamepodcast.com. And that's enough. So we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Yeah?
Yeah, I should do that.
You should get a 7 is what you should do.
I'm supposed to be on the plan where we can just walk in there and get a new one.
By now you can just go in and get them.
I should be able to, right? Yeah. We just, you know, with everything going on, buying a house. Right.
Is that
so
a 6 plus?
This is, what is this?
Or a 6S, I mean?
6S, yeah.
Yeah, not a plus. The S and the plus is really confusing to me. Like, plus means bigger, S means better. Right?
Yeah.
But it's really confusing.
Yeah.
More on the phones.
Unless you want to go backwards, and then I have a 6 plus I could sell you.
6 plus you would sell me?
Yeah, the camera doesn't work.
Oh.
But
hey, that sounds like a deal.
I'm told that AT&T will give me $200 for it.
What?
So, yeah.
Man.
So I'm going to do that.
You know what?
Credit on my bill.
My number one fear is that if I have to turn this in, will I be able to get my pop socket off? And if I can get it off, will I still be able to adhere it to the new phone?
How much did it cost?
It's like $10.
Okay. Well, you could buy a new one.
I know, but I'm kind of attached to this one now. This is my first. Gosh.
I almost bought one for my phone, but I decided not to for now.
You should, because they're awesome.
Yeah. I'll think about it.
Look at how easy it is for me to hold this phone.
It is.
Right now.
I so want you to drop it while you're doing that.
But I won't, because the pop socket is amazing.